Committee will come to order. Got a list of bills, but if we move right along, we'll still get out of here at a decent time. We'll start right off with Senate File 1260, Senator Hand, Food Licensing Requirement Modification, Dairy Trade Practice Act Repeal, and I believe this is an agency bill. So, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And yes, Senate File 1260 is the agency bill that is largely, I think, technical and non-controversial in nature. However, I do have an author's amendment that I'd like to offer at this point for adoption. It's the AO7-0326.
Right. That's this one, right?
You know, I haven't looked at it.
Senator Hand, I'm just trying to count if we got enough to...
We do.
Okay, let the record show that a quorum present. Now, Senator Hand, you can move your amendment if you'd like to get the bill in order.
Mr. Chairman and members, I move the A07 amendment.
Senator Hand moves amendments. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now your bill should be in order.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to ask... Quinn Cheney from the department to come up and talk about the bulk of the bill, which has to do with trying to come and bring our laws into conformance with some things in federal law and to eliminate some, internal conflicts or contradictions that are currently in place in the law, and I think also change some things that are not needed any longer. I'm not entirely familiar with all the details, but maybe should be
Mr. Chair, do we have that amendment?
We should have. It's 0326.
Sorry.
I couldn't find it. It has to do
with yogurt. Sorry.
You have it, Senator Kubley?
I have it, right?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I misspoke. It's not Quinn Cheney. It's Kevin Elfring who will talk about the bulk of the bill. I would like to talk about the changes that my amendment has made. So when he's completed, then I'll explain the amendment.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Kevin Elfring. I'm the director of the Dairy and Food Inspection Program for the Department of Agriculture. If you don't mind, Mr. Chair, I'm going to be leaving the department in 3.5 weeks, and I'm going to have the manager of the Meat and Dairy Inspection Program address the issues and technical changes in the dairy side. And then I'm going to have the manager of the food inspection program address the technical changes on the food side. So I'd like to introduce Dr. Nicole Neeser, is the manager of our dairy and meat inspection program. And then Dave Reed will come up and talk about the food changes.
Welcome to the committee, and I need your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Dr. Nicole Neeser, and as Kevin said, I'm the manager of the Dairy Inspection Program. And basically, I'm going to talk a little bit about the bulk of the changes. Most of these changes are a result of, or requested changes are a result of an FDA audit that was conducted of our program in 2004 and 2005, and most of them are minor changes. And the portion of the bill that I'm going to be discussing is Statute Section 32.21, Subdivision 4. Two provisions of the bill provide for a minor change in the language to read a qualified dairy sanitarian. And that's just a language change that needs to be made to make the other sections of this subdivision consistent with each other. The other sections refer to a qualified dairy sanitarian as well. There's also in Section 32.394, Subdivision 4, the amendment or the change that's being asked for is to adopt the most current version of the Pasteurized Milk Ordinance. The Pasteurized Milk Ordinance is a document that changes every 2 years and currently is adopting the 2001 version, and we are proposing to remove the date reference in that section so that we can just automatically adopt the most current version. Similarly, in Section 32.415, we'd like to remove the date reference, which refers to the USDA's document that applies to manufacturing-grade farms and plants. Again, that's a document that changes frequently, and by removing the date reference, you eliminate the need to have to continuously change the statute.
Thank you. Let's hear from your other witness. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Reed. It's R-E-A-D. I'm manage the food inspection program at in the Dairy and Food Inspection Division, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. The first part of the bill, starting in Section 1, is needed to resolve a statutory conflict that occurs between the Minnesota Department of Agriculture's licensing law in Chapter 28A and the Minnesota Department of Health's licensing law in Chapter 157. The Departments of Agriculture and Health have a joint food code and rules that is used to enforce standards on food establishments. And some of these food establishments, primarily the temporary food establishments like you would see in county fairs or in the state fair or in county celebrations, are licensed with some different provisions that have the limitations defined in Chapter 157, which is in the Minnesota Department of Health Licensing Authority. So because it was a joint food code that was developed, the definitions for these temporary establishments was left in Chapter 157. And what we're trying to do now is add a reference to Chapter 157, that licensing authority, in our licensing law, which is Chapter 28A.
Questions from the members? Senator Coring?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, is this the first stop that this bill has made in this committee?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, yes, it is.
Okay. Did this bill have in it, did it change the current law of where you can't sell milk as a loss leader? Was that in here and now it's not in here? Or can
Mr. Chairman and Senator Coring, there is in the original bill a repealer section 7 that repeals a number of provisions. There are two sections of which sections of law 3.2.70 and 3.2.72 that would repeal the pricing limits that are in law. Now, as I'm looking here at my amendment, I think my amendment may not be structured quite correctly because I did not intend to repeal or to replace all those repealed sections and not have those get repealed. The other repealed sections I would like to retain, the 32.21B, the 32.7174. But my amendment is simply changing that repealer to, instead of repealing all the prices, only have it apply to Class 2 milk products. And if we're ready to talk about that, I'd like to ask Lee Anderson to come up and explain a little bit about what we're doing. But the main intent here, members, is I know there was concern raised when this bill was heard in the House about repealing the price limits on fluid milk, and my intent is not to do that, but to remove the current pricing limitations on Class 2 milk products only, which is essentially yogurt products. But I'd like to have Mr. That's Anderson come up and talk a little bit.
Mr. Chair.
I'm going to have Senate Counsel to help us a little bit here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Hahn, what your amendment does is it deletes the current repealer in the bill right now, Section 7, and it replaces some additional sections that refer to Class 2 dairy products, and then it proposes a new repealer that does not repeal the below-cost pricing. If that's your intent, then your amendment is drafted correctly.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Council. I wasn't sure if it was, and as I was reading through it, I thought maybe I didn't have this written correctly, but my intent wasn't to not repeal the parts that have to be repealed, but to only try to affect the sections of law that deal with the pricing. And instead of repealing all of them, retain the current structure for fluid milk and only try to affect the laws that pertain to Class 2 milk products.
Senator Coring, you have a follow-up?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman and Senator Hahn, is this, if I may ask, is this a bill, an agency bill, and that was asked for by the department?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Coring, yes. Okay. And the original agency bill included the repealer of all the price restrictions, price law that was retained to how we price milk, allowing to be sold or forbidding it to be sold below cost. The original bill had that repealer in it. And as I said, in the course of this progress of this bill and the other body, there's been concerns raised about that, although my understanding is that Minnesota milk producers are not concerned about the repealer in total. And I've talked to them about the repealing of the restraint on selling Class 2 products below price. They don't have a concern with that. But this wasn't originally the agency bill.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if there's somebody from the department who is prepared to just maybe I'm wondering what prompted the repealer in the first place, if somebody could speak to that.
And, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cornyn, just to be clear, that we're not going to repeal.
Right, but I'm just wondering why, what prompted it to begin with.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cornyn, Kevin Alfrin with the Department of Agriculture. I think one of the things that we looked at initially is this a responsibility of the Department of Agriculture to ensure that prices are set for a particular food commodity? And in addition to that, if you look at the law where it presently reads, it's a criminal violation to sell milk below cost. Criminal penalty, except during June. Do you know of any other law that you can commit a crime in a month and it's exempted? So, and I guess it was more of a concern was, you know, is this something that the department should be doing? Is it something that can maybe be revisited and maybe made some modifications to it? And I understand the reasoning for the June because of the dairy month promotion. But, again, it's a criminal violation any other month.
And, Mr. Chairman, I thank you for that. And I know, and I'm not advocating that we get rid of this restriction, but I'm just bringing up the question of I don't know that it's necessarily a bad idea. You know, instead of a grocery store using 12 packs a pop as a loss leader, them using milk as a loss leader, I don't know that that's a bad thing. I don't see it as a bad thing, but I know there's some people that are opposed to that, and I'm not advocating that. Don't get all excited. I'm just saying that I just don't see that as a bad thing. And I dairy farm for 15 years, and I just think the more we can get the public consuming milk, you know, if they go there and they see their kids a 12 pack a pop for $1.99, and they can get a gallon of milk for $1.65, I'd rather have them buy that milk for their kids than buy a 12 pack a pop. So I'm just trying to make a point is all I'm trying to make, sir.
I'm going to go to Senator Scogin.
Mr. Chair, I was going to help Senator Coring understand what we were talking about in subsection 8, but I think he got it, so I'm
fine. I'm going to go to Senator Wergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senator Coring and Senator Hand raise a really good issue that I've wondered about, too, because I'd rather see them purchasing milk than pop.
Exactly.
Is there any way that we can get the Department of Agriculture to kind of do a comparison? There are several states, for instance, Michigan, that when we go there, we buy milk sometimes for 99 cents a gallon, and you buy a lot of other stuff with it, too. I'd like to know how milk consumption, it varies from a state like that to our state, and how milk prices vary, just to kind of know what the effects are of being able to use milk that way. It's a good product.
Well, we have the department down there. Let's ask them.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, Senator Wergen, we certainly can do a little bit of research. I don't know if anybody's going to have real good statistics on any of that, but we can certainly look into it, and maybe even somebody like the Midwest Milk the Promotion Council might have some information and that we'd be able to utilize. But we'll see what we can find out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I have Senator Hand. I have a gentleman raised his hand down there. Maybe we should hear from him if that'd be okay.
That'd be fine, Mr. Chair.
I was hoping you wouldn't say we need a lot of money because I just told him where I come from. I told him there was no money. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Wise Spano. I've represented the Dairies Federation of Minnesota for going on 30 years now. Dairies Federation is the organization that puts milk in bottles and puts the dairy products on the grocer's shelves. in answer to Senator Wergen's question, we have consistently supported the prohibition against sale below cost. The reality is that Minnesota ranks on an age-adjusted basis best in consumption in the United States, and on a non-age-adjusted basis second. Utah leads us in consumption, largely because they have more children than we do. We think that this reality exists because of this, partially because of this law. It's also part of our heritage, but it's also because of this law. The reality is in states like Michigan and Illinois, where milk bounces a lot, the consumption patterns you can see from the distribution, consumption patterns tend to back off when the prices go back up, as they almost always do. You know, when you bring it down and bring customers in, then they go back up. And as a consequence, we feel that the reality is that there is not as much milk consumed. So from our perspective, this law does one thing: it sells more milk. Secondly, the average grocery store in the state of Minnesota has almost a third larger dairy case than other states. And the reason is they don't lose money because they simply don't allow selling at a loss. And so that hyper-competitiveness tends to make more opportunity for consumers to purchase milk. Now, the third reality is it's generally somewhat more expensive in Minnesota. That's simply true. And we sell more, and we sell it at higher costs. That is true. The other reality is that the over-order premiums have been higher in Minnesota traditionally for the last 20 years. And the reason for that is that over-order premiums, which farmers get, are based partially on what our folks, my clients, pay. And they're willing to pay more because they're not selling milk below cost. So we think the net effect is, one, there's more milk sold, more dairy products sold in larger spaces, and it's good for farmers. And I guess we have traditionally said it doesn't seem to us to be a policy that Minnesota ought to get rid of. Relative to the department, and we had talked to the commissioner. It's true that the bill began with this, but then it was supposed to be taken out, and the department decided not to take this on. But then others came in with this proposal to do the yogurt as a specific piece, and my federation does oppose that too.
Senator Dale.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I've been listening to the debate on this for 20 years or so, ever since I got here, and I've always come down on the side of continuing the regulation, because I think it helps a small grocer, it helps sell more milk. And when you've got the normal milk selling at pretty much the same in the big stores versus the small stores, it kind of even helps the organic producers, because, you know, rather than looking at ordinary milk at a buck a gallon as a loss leader, and then the organic milk at $6 a gallon or $8 a gallon or whatever it is, we kind of keep it pretty steady at 3 or 3.5 or so. And so that helps as well. So I've been supportive, and it is controversial. We have to revisit this issue every few years, it seems like. But to me, I like to support the dairy farmer to get more milk sold. I like to support the small grocer so at least he has one product he can compete with. And when he knows he's not going to lose money on milk, like Y. Spano just said, you've got a very well-developed big dairy section in these grocery stores, because they know they can sell those dairy products and make some money on them, or at least they're not going to lose money on it.
Senator Larry.
Hi, Mr. Spano and Mr. Chair, thanks for the testimony. I'm really glad that's
pretty much the take I'd heard from my local farmers and the small grocers and things is that they have been supportive of this law. But my question is, what's before us now, I guess, is an elimination of the Class 2 only. Is it, can we speak to that a little bit as to Class 1 versus the Class 2?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lurie, we also oppose that simply because, as Senator Dill indicated, the entire dairy case, which has both fluid and Class 2 products in it, is affected by this. And so, I mean, we appreciate the concern that General Mills wants to have promotions around the country that they don't have to make exceptions for Minnesota, but, you know, this has been our law since 1944, and I guess we just respectfully disagree that this should be done.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Spano, then, you will find nobody more supportive than of the dairy farmers than I am. I was out there trudging I don't know what word to use, but I was trudging in the
stuff.
The stuff. at 40 below and doing the work. So I know what these people are, what the farmers are going through. My question to you is I buy a lot of milk because I drink a lot of milk, and I don't see a whole lot of fluctuation in the price. And I just talked to a dairy farmer this morning, and I asked him what the milk price is, which I normally do. I want to kind of monitor what it is. And a while back, it was down about 11 or so, but I didn't see any adjustment in the store. So when a farmer is making $18 a hundredweight or he's making $11 a hundredweight, there's a big difference in there. Who's making that money? In between, it certainly isn't the farmer. Then is it the organization that you represent, or is it the grocery store? Because somebody's making money somewhere, and I'm just wondering who that is. Because I would think if a farmer's getting $10 or $11 a hundred, I would think the price should come down, in my mind. But so I don't know if that's it's not a gotcha question. I'm just kind of interested.
Senator Hamm, maybe you could help us a little bit more with your bill. We kind of skipped around you.
Well, no, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that, and I do want Senator Corning asked a question. I think we should let Mr. Spano answer.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Corning.
I'm just sitting here thinking of a good idea.
Yes.
Everybody wants to put wine in a grocery store. Let's fill the liquor stores full of milk.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Mr. Chair?
I could grab that same thing and take it home.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, right now I believe liquor stores are prohibited from selling milk.
The law they have to.
That's right.
No, I just had to have a little fun with that. Okay,
can he answer my question, Mr. Chairman?
You can. Anything you want,
okay.
Senator Corning?
Mr. Chair, Senator Corning, there's no question that when milk prices to farmers go up,
yep,
the catch-up in the stores is more rapid than when they go down.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can say is, yep, everybody's guilty, you know, and that's a reality. There is another reality, though, and that is that over-order premium can get to be a fairly important piece of what a farmer gets. When it's at 11, if it gets up to 160 or 180 or 2 or 220, and it's less than a third less than that in other, like in Wisconsin, that differential is important. And it means that because this law is there, that can be afforded. So I'm now, Ms. Chairman and Senator Corning, as you perhaps know, actually teaching more than I'm supposed to be lobbying. I kept one client and nothing was supposed to happen. and unfortunately it did. But in teaching, we love to make this come out perfectly so that everybody's preconceptions about what's going on is met. Unfortunately, the reality is that for 44 years, we've had a better milk marketing situation in this state, or since 1944, so that's 60-some years. We've had a better milk marketing situation and a frozen milk marketing situation. We used to have all kinds of different laws. It's quite simple now, and yet it seems to work. It works for helping consumers buy more milk, for helping stores sell more milk, and for helping us. And do we make money? Yes.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll just stop. I'll just say one more comment and I'll stop. But I feel like the farmers are always getting the short end of the stick, and I don't like it. I'll just stop at that.
Fair deal.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd like to leave the law just as it is, including this Class 2 milk products. And we have the amendment before us, and I would like to ask Mr. Knopf, what do we need to do that? Do I need to amend Senator Hahn's amendment, or is there something, or do we just need to defeat this? Or I want to in place existing law. So what needs to be done?
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Dill, let's there's a witness on the end of the table. Senator Hahn, I'll go to you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to prevent or suggest Senator Dill can't offer his amendment at all. But I think that we have what I'd like to have is have Mr. Anderson talk a little bit about why we offered the amendment, so that the committee understands what the context of why we did this, and just so the committee knows. And Senator Coring has raised some questions about, you know, why the repealer, and I was perfectly happy to carry the bill as was originally proposed by the agency, but there were issues about the fluid milk that Mr. Spano has pointed out, and so we do not want to make this a controversial bill. But in the course of doing this amendment that Mr. Anderson brought and suggested makes sense, I agreed with him. The retail grocers came to me, and they originally saw the bill as it was proposed, and they had concerns about the repealer and did not want to see the fluid milk price structure be changed, but they did not have any objection to the repeal of the Class 2 limitations. So even the retailers that were concerned about changing the structure of fluid milk pricing were not concerned about the Class 2 pricing. And again, as I said, Minnesota Milk Producers has also said that they are not concerned about the change in the law. But I would like to ask Lee Anderson from General Mills to talk a little bit about where the Class 2 repealer, if you will, why that makes sense and why I think it makes sense for Minnesota consumers and for the milk industry.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Lee Anderson, and I represent General Mills. As most of you know, we're a Minnesota-headquartered company with a global enterprise, but we, in 1977, were fortunate enough to win the lottery and get the license for Yoplait, which is now the largest yogurt in the United States, and we're proud to have it. As such, because it's so popular, we offer lots of promotions to our consumers, and one of those is being passed out right now that would allow buy two, get one free, that kind of thing on products like Yoplait, and we have to avoid those in Minnesota and a handful of other states that do have similar restrictions. But I can tell you for a fact that we do get calls from Minnesota consumers that say, listen, I know you're based here, and I can't even cash this coupon in my own state. Now, the question that I have is, the point is that this only would apply to Class 2 dairy that does not include fluid milk. Fluid milk, I can understand completely everybody's concern about fluid milk becoming a loss leader. That is not what this is intended to do. I would ask if anyone believes that a 30-cent cup of yogurt would be a loss leader. I doubt it. That's not what our intent is. Our intent is to be able to continue to offer the promotions that we do across the country to the good consumers in Minnesota that are asking us to be able to offer those promotions here. But right now, we're restricted from doing it in Minnesota.
And members, Mr. Chairman, just to kind of tag along with that, I do think that this makes sense for consumers. Clearly, the volume of yogurt products is not nearly what the consumption of fluid milk is. The retailers expressed to me, as I said, some concern about the fluid milk issue becoming an opportunity for very, very large retailers with large purchasing power to come in and dominate a marketplace and so forth. That's not going to happen in the case of yogurt. To me, the question is whether or not this is something that would benefit consumers, which I think it would, and does it have any beneficial effect to producers? And I think it would there as well, from the standpoint that if you sell more yogurt, you're going to have to sell more raw material to produce that yogurt. And whether you sell it at a lower cost or a higher cost, whatever price you can make it to get the best sale is the price you ought to sell it at. So I support the intent of this. I do not want this to be controversial. I recognize there's issues with the fluid milk. We tried to find a way to say, can we do some good here for consumers without doing harm to the perceived understanding of the current structure being beneficial.
So. Senator Dale, I believe you got a motion or something on the table here.
Well, not yet, Mr. Chairman, but I'd like to have Mr. Spano explain to us why he's opposed to this Minnesota Food Products Association position on the yogurt issue.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dale, opposed to what?
I think, didn't you say that you were opposed to the Hahn Amendment that took the regulatory part off of Class 2 milk?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dale, yes.
And why is that?
Because Mr. Chairman and Senator Dale, because the dairy case as such is actually dominated by Class 2 products, and milk is, you know, the milk itself sold to drink is the most important of the products. The others are in dollar terms considerably greater, and it seems to us that letting that go as a place where everyone knows that the dairy case is inviolate and will survive, it just doesn't make sense to say, well, we're going to just drop half of it. Feels to us like what you want is you have a good thing, as you expressed earlier, and I agree with that. And so let's keep it that way.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would like to keep it as is. So I'm not. Could Mr. Knopf help craft whatever needs to be done?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, if you want to just amend the amendment, it'd be probably deleting lines 1.3 through 1.35 on page 1. Delete lines 2.1 to 2.7 on page 2. And if you want to leave the repeal of the information on sale of bulk tanks in, that's not in this area. It's something else the department was going to repeal. We could just amend the repealer by deleting sections on 2.9, insert section, delete everything after 3.2.213. Before the period, through R, so delete semicolon and 32.70 subdivision 8 R and insert it is. So then I would read Minnesota Statute 2006 section 32.213 is repealed, because then you would still repeal the bulk tank provision. I'm assuming you wanted to do that.
Okay.
But that would.
That's what I'll move that.
Senator Scoy.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I support Senator Dill's effort, but I did want to ask Mr. Knopf, the amendment's already been adopted. Does this still work to do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Square, sure it does.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Senator Hamm.
Mr. Chairman, and to the amendment, I'm assuming the motion has been made, and I certainly will want the will of the committee to be enacted, and I do want the bill to go forward, and our intent was not to make this a controversial issue. I've been persuaded that there are significant concerns about the fluid milk change. We decided to not try to go forward with that repeal. I'm very sensitive, as my friend Senator Coring is, to the dairy industry. I'd like to see it stronger in Minnesota. We do know that there have been declines in production and other declines in the dairy industry in Minnesota. I do not see how repealing the pricing regulations on Class 2 has any negative effect on milk producers. I understand the intent to try to preserve a structure that has been perceived to be beneficial, but I'm not sure that changing the price 2 or the Class 2 milk product pricing would have any effect on that. I think it would be beneficial for consumers. So I would urge that members would not accept the Dill amendment, but do my vote.
Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I can get on the right page and make sure that I understand everything that's happening and maybe offer a easier way. Have we adopted this amendment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We have. Okay. So, because, well, then let me still press on and just say I think what we're doing is going back to the original bill and just in the repealer section getting rid of 3270 through 32745. And if, you know, if we had made that the amendment in the beginning, it would be the original bill without those repealers, and that's what we're getting
Mr.
to
Chairman,
here.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding of the Dill amendment would be to restore the bill to its original form, I guess, without the...
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Laurie?
Yes.
I want to ask Senator Consul because there's a misunderstanding here someplace.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Laurie, if you look with Senator Dill's amendment, 1.2 is still in the amendment. Along 1.2 of the amendment, it says page 6, delete section 7. So we're deleting the entire repealer from the original bill and then replacing it with a repealer on 2.8, which is only repealing section 32.213. So this would keep the current law for milk pricing intact if Senator Dill's amendment's adopted.
Okay.
Any further discussion? Senator Dill,
pardon?
Do you want us to move your motion?
Yes, I'll move that.
Senator Dill moves adoption of his amendment. I think everybody understands what it is. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
So adopted.
Mr. Chairman, and I guess at this point I would like to move the bill as amended to be... Or would it be referred to?
The floor.
To the floor.
Senator Hanna has been informed, it'll go straight to the floor.
Right.
Something happens in between here and then. They can always jerk it. So if there's any further discussion, Senator Hanna moves Senate File 1260 as amended, recommended pass, and be referred to the floor. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Wiggins. Senator Dill, I think me and you are both going to have to keep running because I've been listening to this for 21 years, too. We never get to the bottom of it.
This is my,
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I thought Senator Hand's bill was simple. I might be in trouble here. Members, Senate File 1285 is fairly simple. We have in place an agricultural chemical incident fund, which means that when there's an agricultural chemical spill, there is cleanup money for it. Excuse me. This was originally put in place so that if a farmer had an incident, for instance, with something on their farm or going down the road with their tractor or whatever, that they could access these funds for cleanup. What has happened over time is that when there are incidents with agricultural spills, chemical spills, for instance, sometimes it can be a tanker truck on the highway or it can be a train heading down the railroad tracks, and these funds were never intended to clean up that type of a large commercial spill because those folks are common carriers that have insurance for those purposes. So what this does is say that these funds are not available to basically commercial carriers. They're back to the original intent of the farmer's small incident on the roadway or on the farm. And that's about what it is. Oh, Mr. Chair, I do have the A1 amendment, which is necessary to make the rest of the bill work.
Senator Wiggins, wait a minute till we get it.
Mr. Chair, this amendment came from Greg Knopf to make sure the bill was in order, so if Greg wants to mention something, that would be wonderful.
Oh. And we'll have him explain it for us.
Mr. Chairman and members, the reason, and I suggested this to Senator Wergen, the way the department is doing this, you know, they're defining a new term, incident, under this chapter. But if you look at the amendment, right now it says that the definitions of 18B, 18C, and 18D apply. And the concern is they want to more narrowly define incident. But incident's already defined in Chapter 18D. And so it would have been, the way that the bill was brought in, there would have been two definitions of incident that would apply to this. There's the one in the chapter, and there's the one in Chapter 18D. I thought it would be clearer to make sure that people understand that you use this definition for 18E, not the definition in 18D. And that's what this amendment does, is to make it clear that there are not two definitions of incident. We're using this definition in this chapter.
Okay. Let's hear from your witness down there, and then we'll act on your amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, wait a minute. Senator Wergen, let's adopt your amendment, and then we'll ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A1 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves the A1 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Now your bill should be in order.
Mr. Chair, there is another section of the bill which is eliminating a fee that's in place, and my witness will address that. And, of course, the incident definition that was just talked about. So I'll have my witness answer.
Welcome to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Greg Bazicki. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And just a couple of quick comments. The new definition of incident, as was explained, eliminates the threat to release from this portion of our statute. So what basically means is that in paying compensation or reimbursement, we would not be paying reimbursement on situations where there was merely a threat to release. There actually has to be a release. That's what we're trying to clarify under Section 2. In Section 3, as Senator Wergen explained, we're asking for a provision to be repealed, and I think that's on the appendix. And what this is there's a penalty for in subdivision 5, if you have an initial registration, if you don't register a product but you sell it in the state, what we're encountering is specialty fertilizer products that are being sold in the state without going through the registration process, and we're limited to a $100 penalty, or the penalty it would cost to register. And what we're finding is, on some occasions, companies that actually register products with us will develop new products, run them into the state, skipping paying the registration fee, and wait to get caught. And in that case, we would like to have more of a penalty, because the companies are basically saying, hey, it's just a small penalty. Let's wait until the Department of Agriculture catches us. This is not agricultural fertilizer. I'd like to be clear. This is largely the specialty products that we find for houseplants and things of that nature. That's where we seem to be running into a pretty common problem right now. So this would basically eliminate a state penalty. We have other penalty provisions that would give us more flexibility. So by removal of this, we're not bound to a very small penalty. Mr. Chair, if you or any of the members have questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
I'm going to ask Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just telling the chair, this repeal passed the Senate about an hour ago in the omnibus finance bill, so it's be the second time you've seen it today.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to make a motion to remove lines 2.8 and 2.9 from the bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you could leave it in there, and just it can be repealed twice. The only issue is if there's a financial implication to it. This isn't a finance bill, but it could be in both places, I think.
Okay, Senator Wergen, maybe if you leave it in both places, then you're sure it's going to be someplace.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if there aren't any further questions, I'll move Senate File 1285 be recommended to pass and go to the floor.
As amended.
Senator Wergen moves that Senate File 1285, as amended, be recommended to pass, and it goes to the floor. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Wergen, you want to do your other one quick?
I can do that, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Senate file, thank you. Senate file 1388 has to do with the commercial feeds, well, I can't even say that one, commercial feeds restrictions in Minnesota. And this was brought to me also by the department. And essentially, by the way, these commercial feeds are not for human consumption. So we're not dealing with foods that are for human consumption. And what it does is works a little bit with the labeling instructions. In other words, it says it has to be labeled as feed or for use as not labeled as feed or for use as feed. It changes the labeling instruction, puts a definition of feed into law. If you look at Section 8, it talks about the manufacturer and what has to be, manufacture means to grind, mix, blend, process, package, or label feed. So it clears up that definition. Under contract feeder, it explains that this is a person who is an independent contractor and feeds to animals. So it's clear again that it's animals. So, excuse me, Mr. Chair. It also goes on then in Section 10 and talks about a person who makes only retail sales of commercial feed, and it takes a little bit of the language out of there that, if I understand it correctly, is unnecessary language. And that, Mr. Chair, is actually the essence of the bill, except that on page 4 point, on page 4, line .22, it also says that the label must bear a quantity statement. And then on page 5, it speaks to the ingredients in feed in line 5.6. And I will let the department take it from there if they want to add any more technical information. This is Kevin Alfring from the department, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Kevin Alfring with Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Actually, we had made some technical changes to the feed bill last year, and after that time, we met with members of the feed industry, and we really had a very good meeting and discussed how we could clarify some of these requirements so that it really more clearly defined who is responsible for paying tonnage fees, what a feed is, what a commercial feed is. It really is more of technical nature, supported by the feed industry. And I just want you to know that it, in no way is this the intent of this to expand any inspection requirements on any facilities. It's just more clarifications.
Any discussion? I failed last time. I should ask anybody in the audience have any concerns? If not, Senator Wiggins, what do you want to do with your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that Senate file 1388 pass and be sent to the floor.
Senator Wiggins moves that Senate file 1388 be recommended to pass and be referred to the floor. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Senator Lurie?
You got it.
Let's do 1417 first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have Senate File 1417 for us. This is Department of Agriculture brought us this bill, and it is to work on the best management practice loan program that they work with. It helps local governments provide low-interest financing to farmers and rural landowners and agriculture supply businesses to implement practices that prevent water pollution. That's what the Ag BMP loan program is. This makes a few changes to this program that's been in effect since 1995. And since 1995, project costs have been increasing, and so one of the biggest provisions is to move the maximum project cost limit from $50,000 to $100,000 per loan, and it makes the limit for all loan types, the time limit for all loan types 10 years, whereas some of them had been limited to 5 years currently. The second provision defines water quality cooperatives and allows these joint owners of cluster rural septic treatment systems like lake associations and whatnot to apply under one umbrella organization and receive one loan, provided they can provide adequate security for the loan. This one is a one-word thing, but amendment on page 2, line 22, which basically gets to some of the
legitimate project costs like design fees and the like that might be incurred before absolute final authorization by the local government. Some of these costs that are for a project that is signed off on but full approval has not come yet. And I have Jim Boerboom from the department with me to tell us a little bit more, and we'll stand for any questions.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. Jim Boerboom with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. As Senator Lurie described, these are change recommendations that come to us from some of the participants or the stakeholders that utilize this Ag BMP program. We've got 10 years of history with the program. We close anywhere from 700 to 1,000 loans a year under this program, and the change recommendations, I think, are certainly would be valuable for the purposes of those who use it. And I think it's been, a good request.
Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Berman, do you have more money in this than is currently being utilized?
Actually, Mr. Chair, Senator Scoy, the Clean Water Legacy in the environment, I believe, put in $4.5 million into this. So on the sheet that you'll find there, it says that there would be 52 fewer loans by increasing the total amount and increasing the timeline for some of them. I believe that $4.5 million would actually make it so that they'll be able to offer more loans than they have historically. And, you know, in my mind, bringing some of these cluster septics and treatment systems in is just a huge ability to try to get people to make their developments in a more responsible fashion and keep a lot of ag land open rather than the 10-acre splits that I've seen all across my area. And so I'm looking for ways to get people to work on these clustered developments, and this would be one of those vehicles that I don't truly support.
Senator Scoy.
Already in current law.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not exactly sure about that, but when I'm looking at this, you know, we're talking about the Ag Best Management Practices Loan Program, and we're going to make this available to lake associations.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious as to why those cabin owners that are along that lake need to get into the agriculture loan program. It didn't seem like the two are very fit very well together.
Well, it's to protect the waters that are in our areas, and truthfully, one of the best ways is to try to get these clustered developments to institute proper usage and septic systems. Maybe Jim could help me a little bit with that, Mr. Boerboom.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, the program has historically been available to rural landowners. And one of the other handouts that you may have in your packet would be just a summary sheet of the loan program. And you can see historically there are several different options that are available, either ag waste management, structure erosion control, and then septic systems. And septic systems has been the larger user of the program with more than 3,200 applications and $21 million in loans. So there is a tremendous demand for this type of water quality management, and lake associations or cooperatives, certainly we would like to make them available to those types of entities.
Well, I guess that, you know, it's a good thing to clean up the water. I'm just thinking about on the North Shore of some of these lakes, you know, they're pretty fancy houses, and sure, they would be rural landowners, and it'd be good to clean up the lake, but I just didn't see it as a real great fit with the ag loan program, but I won't stand in the way. Let her go.
Senator Scoy, I could also say that some of those are farmers moving off the farm and moving by the lake and might need a little help. They're not all of them living fancy cabins. Not Elmer Island, anyway.
It has to comply with the soil work.
And I, you know, we might also add that the eligibility is actually determined by the county or the soil and water conservation districts in each area. So, I mean, it's really each area determines what the best loans to give in order to properly protect their waters in that area are. And so it does come through the locals And if, you know, if your county or mine decided that, you know, no, we don't need to be supporting the cabin owners, and sometimes we do have a pretty strong sentiment in that regard, they could do so.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Well, Mr. Borbon, wouldn't it be safe to say that somebody with a $1 million cabin wouldn't qualify for any of this money?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, actually there are no net worth limitations or any eligibility with the financial perspective, but as we pointed out earlier, it is a local decision as to who the applicants may be.
Any other questions? Anybody from the audience have anything to say? I think we all, as we move along this session, want to clean up our lakes and clean up our waters, and this is just one of those tools that could help. Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, one of the things I'm very interested in is trying to do things that will help preserve agricultural land, forest land, open space land, and preserve wildlife habitat. And this bill that the Environment Committee heard yesterday, that some of you were present at that, Chairman Shotbury's committee, it was a bill that I've been working on for about 3 years, including input from Senator Becky Laurie 2 years ago. We worked on it quite a bit, and I couldn't help but think in my mind, as you were describing this bill and why it was important, Senator Becky Laurie had sent me a memo one time with it was an 800-acre parcel, 2040s on it, with one dot in each of the each 40. It wasn't a section, it was an 800-acre parcel. And the adverse impact all those dispersed houses have on the environment versus taking all 20 of them on an 800-acre parcel and putting them in a little clustered development on one side of that 800-acre piece with a community septic system. And that's a much better way to do it, and you save so much more open space and farmland and forest land by doing it that way that it fits right in with this bill you've got fits right in with what I'm trying to promote in terms of controlling urban sprawl.
Senator Dill, you came and talked to me in my office, and this bill came to me later that very day, and I thought the same thing, and so I'm glad to be carrying this bill and look forward to working with you on other
Senator
bills.
Laurie, I'm looking at the clock.
I'm looking at moving this bill. I believe it can go directly to the floor, so I'd recommend that Senate File 1417 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor.
Senator Laurie moves that Senate File 1417 be recommended to pass and referred to the floor. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. We have 20 minutes, then we have to be out of here, so pick up your next one.
Right, Mr. Chair, we're going to do 1660.
Okay. Senator Laurie.
This is another bill brought to me by the department. It is a food safety and defense task force creation. This one will have to go to state and local government. And I'm going to have an author's amendment for it that we're still working on. I'm not sure. Okay, with some changes orally as well. Essentially, we need to add a couple of members. We don't know of any opposition to this bill. It's really in recognition of the fact that there's more and more foodborne illness and disease. And the feds have some money available to operate task forces such as this. There is no cost to the state, but we would like to get a task force like this put together in order to, if you just look at subdivision 5, it has the duties to coordinate educational efforts regarding food safety, to provide advice and coordination to state agencies, and to serve as a source of information and referral for the public, news media, and others concerned with food safety, and make recommendations to Congress and the legislature and others about appropriate action to improve food safety in the state. So that's what we're trying to get done. Again, there's no cost to the state. The feds are ready to put some money in. The amendment that we're passing out has to do with some of the membership. There's a couple of folks that wanted to get into the membership, the Minnesota Grocers Association, and then so I have an A1 amendment here.
Yes.
And then there's another group that wants to get in, so that'll have to be made orally.
Mr. Bodden maybe can help me with that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lurie, I talked to Ms. Cheney from the Department of Agriculture a little bit about the additional representatives. So we'll make some changes on the oral, looking at the A1 amendment. You want to delete lines 1.3 to 1.5. And then look into the bill, beginning on line 1.21, before the period, insert semicolon, paren, Romanet 5, one person representing the Minnesota Grocers Association, and semicolon, one person representing represents a Minnesota-based manufacturer of microbial detection equipment and remediation products. Okay. Basically, you're adding two representatives to the nine members. You're further prescribing the nine members the governor must appoint to the task force, and I did this in consultation with the agency.
Right. And so that's that. And the rest of this is really cleaning it up because this has got to go to state and local government, and Senator Rust has a series of qualifications we need to meet, so we're trying to get some of that done beforehand. So with that, I'll move the A1 amendment as an author's amendment.
Senator Lurie moves the A1 amendment as amended, right?
Yes.
As amended. You recommend to get your bill in the order you want it. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Senator Lurie, I don't know if we need any more testimony.
It's good by me. I'll move that this Senate file 1660 be recommended to pass and referred to the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee.
Senator Lurie moves that Senate file 1660 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to State and Local Government Operations. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? So adopted. Now we're down to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Kubley. That's Senate file 1472.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate file 1472. Originally, we had talked about taking the cap off of this, or taking the sunset off, and just making the ban on open air swine lagoons or basins permanent. There are a couple of amendments, the A2 and A3 amendment, Mr. Chair. Let's deal with the A2 amendment first.
Senator Kubley, wait till we pass out.
All right, sure.
Senator Kubley, on the A2 amendment.
Yeah, the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair and members, just changes the sunset date and puts it out another 5 years to 2012. It would leave the possibility open. I understand there is some research that's being done primarily on methane, and, you know, if that... into something, it seems like that would be a legitimate reason to extend the sunset rather than make the ban permanent. So that's basically the reason for offering the extension over the permanent ban.
Senator Kubley, why don't you move the A2 amendment, and we'll take some more discussion.
Mr. Chair, I would move the A2 amendment to Senate file 1472.
The Kubley motion. We adopt the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? So adopted. Now, Senator Kubley, do you have another?
There is an A3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Then we'll come back and take testimony, and after we get the bill in order that you'd like to have it. Thank you.
This is actually an amendment to the First Amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So this is an amendment to the amendment. So the I would move the A3 amendment to the A2 amendment.
Explain what that does.
Well, it simply inserts the words or expansion on line 1.4, where it says new open-air swine basins. It changes that to new or expansion open-air swine basins.
Do you understand it? All in favor of Kubley A3 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Adopt, and now your bill is in order. Now we'll take testimony. I believe there's two people that wanted to say something, and now's the time for them to come forward.
Well, Mr. Chair, I have with me Mr. Rick Nord. He'd like to make a few comments to the committee, and then you can ask for other people in the room that might want to testify.
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
No. My name is Rick Nord from Northfield, Minnesota, Northfield Township. I would like to explain testify to some of the things that I put up with living by the Holden Farms swine production. In 1989, I purchased my place, a little 10-acre hobby farm. In the wintertime, in the spring of that year, when the wind started blowing and things started to thaw out, I realized I had made a substantial mistake in the purchase of the property that I bought. I went to the producer and asked if they could do anything about the odor, and for the last 17 years, in my opinion, nothing, absolutely nothing has been done to cut down on the odor. Am I anti-agriculture? Absolutely not. I'm a truck driver by trade. I do a little bit of farming. I was born and raised on a farm. We had hogs, cattle, chickens, cats, and dogs. One dog, but that way. I'm a farmer at heart. I love farming. I have nothing against animals. The problem is in these large lagoons that I happen to live by. Holden's Farms, they had a fire back in December of last year. At that time, they were number 19th in the country for the sow-producing piglets for a lot of people in this country. What I've done in the last 17 years to try to keep myself happy with my little place, I've had to have plastic on the inside of my windows year-round, all the time. My basic heat for my house is electric baseboards. My backup heating system was a wood-burning furnace in the basement. I took the wood-burning stove out of my basement because of the downdraft that I was continuously getting when the furnace wasn't being operated. The downdraft was also bringing in the odor from the lagoons. So that furnace came out. I put in a high-efficient oil burner LP gas, which doesn't have to use the chimney flues. Both of my chimney flues are blocked off on top, sealed. I also, my fire insert for burning logs is blocked off with plastic, so I can't enjoy a night sitting by the fire. So what's happening is Holden Farms, with their high, huge lagoons that are in my neighborhood, and I also want to say that there's an awful lot of unhappy people that it's not just me, it's anybody that lives around these facilities, and a lot of these people that are living by this facility were born and raised on farms also. So what's happening is I've had to also put in 19 new windows in my house. So what the Holdens aren't doing to stop the problem, they're passing the expense off onto me and anybody else that lives in the vicinity of these lagoons. I don't think that's right. My property is worth just as much to me even though it's much smaller than on scale is what they have, but it's still just as important to me. It's what I work for. It's what I am going to leave to my daughter and my grandson when I'm gone. And I take a lot of pride in what I have because I guess I had a dad and a mother who taught me right from wrong. And to me, with them not trying to do anything about the odor is wrong. It's not something that I would want to leave my kids what they have in my neighborhood. The other thing that the last thing that I want to say is they have applied for a CUP to expand. Now they're waiting for to see if it's going to be accepted or not. The paperwork is at the MPCA. I have submitted a petition to see if an EAW is going to be performed and an EIS. This is all in the works as I speak. So if I'm coming across as being anti-farming, I'm not. I'm a farmer at heart, and if anybody wants to ask me some questions, I'll try to ask or answer.
Mr. Chairman, just to try to get up to speed here, so we've adopted the delete all. It looks appears like we've adopted the delete all amendment. What about the A3 amendment?
We adopted both amendments.
Okay, so then, Mr. Chairman, my question to Senator Kubley then is, you know, I've got a lot of farmers in my district, and farming continues to get more difficult all the time, and it seems like if the farmer can't get bigger, they're kind of out of business. So you're saying in this amendment that they can't expand at all, period.
Mr. Chair and Senator Coring, I'm not saying that at all. I think, you know, it seems to me that, you know, I've had a lot of experience with lagoons, and, you know, there's a lot of objection to lagoons, but there's hardly any objection to putting pits under buildings. So it would probably be, you know, a cost. You know, there'd be another cost of putting the pits under the buildings. But since pits have been put under buildings, I don't think, you know, I could count on one hand the number of complaints that I get from people who live around hog confinement facilities where the pits are under the buildings. But, you know, during my first 6 years here, I got an average of 170-some calls a year complaining about open-air lagoons. And so, you know, it seems to me that the counties that adopted, a local ordinance against open-air lagoons are right off the get-go have never had to put up with the number of complaints that you get when you have those kinds of things in your district. And I don't know if you have any open-air lagoons Senator Coring. I guess, I do think that the vast majority of swine producers in our area have gone to the pits under the buildings and then, you know, fans that force the air down on the animals and out through some biofilters. You know, it's really made a huge improvement in public perception of the buildings.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Kubley, I want this state as Senator Dill wants this state to be. I think Senator Dill wants this state to be a ag-friendly state. Wouldn't you agree, Senator Dill?
Yes, I would.
And I'm concerned that we're sending a message that, no, if it smells, we don't want you here. We'll send you to Iowa or we'll send you to South Dakota or wherever you want. And so I guess I get concerned when we start doing things like this that we're sending a message to people, we don't want you to farm here. We might as well just develop all the farmland. So that's just my comment on it. I don't agree with this amendment, and I wish I would have been in the room quicker on this on the or expansion.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Coring, I think, that's an issue that works both ways. I think we need a state that is farmer-friendly, but I also think we need farmers who are neighbor-friendly. And it does seem to me that putting the pits under the buildings is an excellent compromise. It allows you to move forward with your production, but it's allowing it to happen in a way that is not offensive to your neighbors, and so that's been my concern.
Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Coring, you know, this is just for swine facilities. And it's just if they're going to expand or build a new facility. And I had a couple of hog barns come into our community, and they're these new style, you know, and they got the cement underneath them and the fans and the filters and all that. You don't know they're there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's not like they're not going to be able to expand. It's not like we're not going to raise hogs in the state. But we really, you know, when they're expanding or building a new facility, they should use this new technology. Mm-hmm. And I think what Senator Kubley's doing is just fine, in my opinion. And, you know, I've been a pretty strong advocate for animal agriculture for a long time, but I don't see that this is a problem. I think most of the new stuff is going that way anyway.
One last question I'm going to ask Mr. Schoenfield to come up.
Yeah, and I just want to respond to Senator Kubley, Mr. Chairman, if I may. And I understand, Senator, what you're saying, and I guess I'm just kind of a not that I'm a black helicopter guy, but I'm a slippery slope guy. I just feel like we do this now, and then next year it's just easier for dairy. I have a lot of dairy. I have 329 dairy farms in my district, and I'm just concerned that if this starts, then we got a big problem. So that's all I'm concerned about.
I'm going to ask is Mark Coing from Buffalo.
No, he was unable to come, Mr. Chair.
Okay, who else? Do you have anybody else?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
And I'm going to ask Mr. Schoenfield to come up at pork, Minnesota pork producers, and see if he can shed some light here. Welcome to committee. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jerry Schoenfeld of the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. I guess before I can shed any light on this, I have to ask a question as to what it means. There's, in reading it as it fits into the bill, I guess there would be two different ways of reading it. One is expansion of animal numbers, and the other is expansion of the lagoon itself. And so, first of all, if anybody might be able to give me some view of that, whether we're talking about expansion of the swine basin or whether we're expanding numbers of livestock in the permit.
Mr. Schoenfeld, I'm trying to read this too.
It's basin.
But the bill would not approve construction of any new open air basin. Most of the hog operations where I live are under the. I mean, do we have many? I didn't think we had any more big open air new ones at least.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if Mr. Knopf might be able to assist with answering my question.
Well, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schoenfeld, if you read the sentence, it's new or expansion open-air swine basins. It doesn't say anything about the number of animals. And that's what they get the construction permit for, is the actual construction of the basin, not for the number of animals.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess that's the only concern I would have to have that clarified, because most of you were around 5 years ago when we went through all of these feedlot wars. There are a few people that were not, but on the committee. But if you recall, it was fairly involved in lots of compromises and lots of different looks. And when it came to the swine basins, my association, the pork producers, supported closing down future lagoons or swine basins. And we still do. And we support the bill as it came into the committee with the amended 5-year extension. And as Senator Kubley had indicated, and we appreciate the fact that he'd consider the 5 years so that we might have a chance to look at methane digesters down the road. And for the most part, what technology is available uses lagoons when it comes to methane digesters, because they take the dry solids that are scraped out of the buildings and don't use underground pits for those kinds of situations, because the methane is lost in the underground pits through the fan systems and so forth. So instead, they use the dry manure that comes off, or at least somewhat dry, that comes off of a scraped system, and the lagoon is used for a storage unit after it goes through the methane digester. and therefore, and it is also treated, and the methane digesters helps eliminate some of the odor and so forth as well. So that's the reason we were asking for that. There have been several pilot projects across the nation that have tried doing this and have not yet been very successful. So to go down 5 years down the road is acceptable because maybe within those 5 years, as we're looking at all these things, we can find some answers to that. However, with regard to the individual permits, and that's why I asked the question about the permits, at the time that we looked at this 5 years ago, it was recognized that those people that already had them would, in a sense, be grandfathered in. And that there are cases, and I think the gentleman to my left here that from Northfield that brought up the one particular case, I think they, and I'm not totally knowledgeable about this, and so I'm not trying to counter anything. But I think he mentioned that there had been a fire at this particular unit. And I think what they had applied for was to increase the number of hogs that they could have at that unit since they had to rebuild after the fire. But I don't believe they were asking for increasing the basin size, and we don't support increasing the basin size. But my only concern here would be that you're not saying that if a person rebuilt on that site that they wouldn't be increasing the number of hogs that might be able to use into that basin. Because in many cases, basins were overbuilt for the facilities that were there. And depending upon how you manage the basin, whether you pump it out every year or whether you pump it out every 6 months or whatever would make a difference in how you could utilize it. And the odor and so forth is not dependent necessarily upon those kinds of factors. And so it is more about how it's loaded and how what they do with it once it's there. And so I'm not opposed to saying that you can't expand the size of a basin that exists on a grandfathered situation, but I would be opposed to say you can't expand the number of livestock that might use that same basin at a time. And so that would be my concern and question, and guess I would like that at least clarified if possible. And we do support the bill to extend the situation here to ban lagoons in the future in construction.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering if we could, to kind of expedite things, Mr. Knopf, is there any way that we could come up with an amendment so that we could find common ground here that would clarify that a little bit better?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Coring, I was just looking at it. If you wanted, I still think it works the same either way, but if you instead of on line 1.6, it's delete or expansion from the amendment, and then before the period on 1.6, inserted for the construction of expansion open air swine basins. I still think it reads the same either way, but if Mr. Schoenfeld is more comfortable with that.
I think Mr. Nord would like to make another comment.
Mr. Chair, about the expansion and about the fire.
For the comment.
The fire that they had back in December took out about 5,000, between 4,000 and 5,000 hogs. The manager of that facility lives within a half a mile of that facility. It's less than 3,000 feet from my house. He's 800 feet from my house or 1,000 feet from my house. Why this fire got out of hand or even started or why it wasn't stopped, I don't know. I know when a fire gets going, it's bad, especially when there's animals in there. Too bad it happened. But the building that they put back up is the exact same building that was there. The exact same number of animals, I'm sure, along with the nursery, is in this same building that burned. What they want to do now, they want to add another 500-foot building plus another 65-foot building that has to do with sows and gestation crates and things like that. With the merits that they have with me and my neighbors, I don't understand why they should be given a CUP to expand, being they haven't done anything to stop the odor in the last 17 years that I've lived there. It's ludicrous to me. Am I trying to knock farming? No, I'm not. My property and everybody else that lives around there is worth just as much to us, and with the odor that we have to put up with, for them to expand, to just to dump more pig dupe in this lagoon is ludicrous. I'm absolutely opposed.
Well, members,
and I don't see why I shouldn't be recognized for that.
Mr. Chairman?
I wonder, and I'm going to ask your judgment, if we should lay this over until we have a little more time.
Mr. Chairman, I would so move to lay this over until we can work out. It appears that it isn't all worked out, and so I would move to lay over. Somebody tell me what number it is. It's 1472. Lay over Senate File 14, or table Senate File 1472.
I'd like to go to the members, but I believe the rule is you can't argue, you don't get to debate a table motion.
Mr. Chair, could I
no debate?
Could I move to strike the words "or expansion" from line 1.4?
Higher motion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That motion's the highest motion.
All right, real good.
And so.
Mr. Chairman, if Senator Kubley's wanting to, it's his bill, I would withdraw that for now and like to hear what Senator Kubley has to say.
Senator Kubley?
Well, it just seems to me that it's, holding up the process, and, the primary purpose was to change the sunset, and I think we could move forward with agreement on that portion of it.
Mr. Scoy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schoenfeld, to my knowledge, and I don't know everything there is to know about this, but to my knowledge, just about all the new hog facilities in this state are the ones that are with the holding basin underneath the building. And those guys that are building those are making money, raising hogs, and running a business.
To reconsider the
eighth and amendment. Why, they get along well with their neighbors, and if somebody's putting up new buildings and, doing new construction down somewhere, you let them keep their old building and their old lagoon, but their new stuff, why would they not put the lagoon under the building like everybody else in the state is doing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy. I don't know specifically the answer to that, but what's being debated here is kind of about a situation about some particular operation that I don't think you or I know much about the details. But what I do know is this, that as we looked at this whole situation, one of the things that was asked for by people was local control. And what this legislature has done over the years is provide the opportunities for townships, provide the opportunities for counties to pass ordinances to regulate these kinds of things, and they have done so. And in addition to that, we have passed state laws as this one that says no new construction of basins. And all I'm saying, I guess, is that I wasn't a part of any of these discussions, but we're talking about a conditional use permit here. It was just mentioned. And the conditional use permit is a local decision. Now, the specifics of what this basin is or another basin or the situation that might be down the road, I don't know the answer to that. But I know that the county commissioners and the townships and so forth, some of the people that would propose this amendment had asked for those kinds of things. And what I have heard from some of this is that, well, we didn't like their decision. And so... So we're asking the state to interject. And I guess all I'm saying is, you kind of can't have it both ways.
Senator Kubley.
Thank you.
Either you or I'm going to move to reconsider the A3 amendment.
Well, I'm willing to do that, Mr. Chair. I know Mr. Nord has another comment he'd like to make. I don't know how much longer you want to go on. It's already been longer than I thought it would be.
We're already 10 minutes longer than we thought. It's important, so I don't want it.
Mr. Chairman, I would so move to reconsider the A3 amendment.
Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. So adopted. Now we're back to.
You can just withdraw.
Needs to withdraw.
Now it's up to Senator Coogley. You need to withdraw your.
Well, Mr. Chair, if the A3 portion of it has now been deleted, I would move that Senate File 1472 be recommended to pass.
Senator Coogley, I'm getting instructions. You have to move to withdraw.
Doesn't have to move. He just has to withdraw his amendment.
You have to withdraw the amendment. Right?
All right. Well, I would make the motion then, Mr. Chair. Do you care to hear Mr. Nord's comments, or are you just moving it along now? And
well, I guess this time of day my head starts squirming. All I'm still trying to figure out. I'd like to go back to Malcolm the liquor store. Except that's more.
Yeah.
Well, I'll move that.
Senator Coogley, you withdrew your amendment, right? You withdrew your amendment, right?
And now he wants to move the bill.
So now we have the bill
made
before.
Made the motion.
Now we have the bill before.
As amended by the A2.
As amended, yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, members, does that help us?
Mr. Chairman.
There's a motion.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Nerdell, Senator Hamm. I tell you what we're going to do. I'm going to lay this bill over because we're not getting any place. We'll lay it over. We'll pick it up next time.
We're about 30 seconds from.
This needs to go around. I think you had about three people trying to come.
Okay.